Hey everybody, thanks for hitting the download button on the Mania Mania podcast. Joey and I have had a really fun time reliving some of the best and worst moments from the WrestleMania's past, and we want to include you in the fun for upcoming episodes, so send us an email with your best and worst moments of any future WrestleMania that we haven't covered yet to mymaniamania@gmail.com, and we'll include your thoughts and your comments in our next podcast. So please keep hitting the download button, subscribe to iTunes, and enjoy the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Mania Mania! Welcome to Mania Mania 12. I am your host, Terry Camp Coronet Catlett. Here, as always, with the best tag team partner in the world, Jway Hollywood Backlot Holt.
Yeah.
And today we're going to review for you WrestleMania 12. Jway.
Yes.
After the last WrestleMania, Lawrence Taylor ran roughshod over the entire WWF. Is that correct?
That's right. There's nobody left.
Nobody left. He cleared house.
He's the only one.
So for WrestleMania 12, it's just him reading poetry.
For 3 hours.
Yep. Fantastic. What actually happened between... has WWF recovered from the debacle that was WrestleMania 11?
It seems like it, but then also there's only six matches on the card, so maybe not.
All right, we're still having trouble filling like the major league draw of Hulk Hogan or Ultimate Warrior.
Yep,
and but we've got like Shawn Michaels, Bret Hart, Undertaker, just Diesel, sitting on type.
Yep,
but what's been going on in the world of WWF over the last 365 days.
Okay, so Shawn Michaels was the Intercontinental Champion after he lost to Diesel, and he ended up winning the Intercontinental Champion. He then got beat up at a bar.
What?
Yeah, by a bunch of Marines in a bar in Syracuse.
Nice man minding his own business.
Yeah, so then he had to give up his title.
Okay.
That's
what happens when you lose at a bar.
Yeah.
You got to give up your belt.
Yeah, I think this one might have been when he lost his smile. I don't remember exactly, but...
they beat up his smile?
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Yeah, but I think this is when he lost his smile, so then he had to give up his Intercontinental Championship to Dean Douglas. He had to forfeit in Dean Douglas.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a penalty.
Yeah, Dean Douglas was the one that ended up getting his title back.
Okay.
So then Shawn Michaels ends up coming back, and he wins the 1996 Royal Rumble.
Nice.
Which gives him a title shot at the WWF Championship at WrestleMania. Who is Bret the Hitman Hart? So then they decide to go for 1 hour in an Iron Man match.
Yeah, because that's going to finally settle the score.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be in the ring for 60 minutes. Whoever has the most pinfalls in 60 minutes is clearly the best man among the two.
Exactly.
And so that's kind of like the big match setup for this one. We also have a match on the card between Undertaker and Diesel.
Yep.
Two giant men that are looking to inflict a lot of damage on one another.
Yes.
But we are ready now for WrestleMania 12. And so let me set the stage. It is March 31st, 1996, at the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, California. 18,853 people slammed into that building, waiting to see an Iron Man match between two soon-to-be legends.
Yep.
And we open with a video promo for this Iron Man match from Bret Hart and HBK, just documenting the struggle between these two.
Yeah.
Two bitter enemies, soon to be bitter rivals.
Yeah. It was a very intense promo.
It was a very intense promo. And we then cut to a live shot of the crowd going absolutely mental, starting to see a lot more of the signs that we're really accustomed to nowadays.
Yeah.
Sprinkled in. But then we go to Vince and Jerry the King Lawler, who are our tag team announcers for the event.
King still does not have a shirt.
He still can't find one, and he will not find one for the next 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
But he and Vince kind of set up the event for the evening, and Vince is in particularly crazy over-the-top fashion.
Yeah.
I don't know what note he gave himself, but he is...
he's taking it to heart.
He's taking it to heart, and then we go right to match number one, which is between...
Camp Cornette, which is Vader, British Bulldog, and Owen Hart with Jim Cornette, versus Yokozuna, Ahmed Johnson, and Jake the Snake Roberts.
And there's a stipulation that if Jim Cornette's team loses, then Yokozuna gets 5 minutes alone with Jim Cornette.
Yeah, that's a lot of time.
That is, because he will not need hardly any of that, tennis racket included. But when there are stipulations like that, of course, that's all I'm really thinking about is, like, this is obviously going to happen.
Yes.
But didn't kind of turn out like that in this one, which is kind of, it's weird that they have this kind of stipulation and then don't kind of let it pay off in some way.
You know, you're watching it like, well, this is going to happen and I'm going to be happy about it.
I hadn't seen Ahmed Johnson in a long time and I forgot just how slick and oily that man is.
Yeah.
He came down to the ring fully shiny, and that I hadn't seen him in a while.
I saw him at a house show one time, and his like jock strap was just outside of his trunks the whole time, and it was awesome.
Well, he's that kind of guy. Way to go, Ahmed.
He also has this thing where anytime he like slams people or if he has to exert a lot of force, he just goes "motherfucker" as he slams them.
Well, that's what gives him the extra power boost is necessary to power slam people. But this match is just, you know, it starts off with just a huge free-for-all.
Yeah.
What did you think of this match, sir?
There was a lot of action, and it was all right. There was at the beginning, Ahmed Johnson goes for a splash over the top, and he, like, I don't know what he was doing, but his legs were so much higher than his head, and if Vader wasn't a solid base to catch him, he would have just like landed on his head.
Because he went right over the top rope to Vader down on the ground.
Yes.
And you're right. Like Vader kind of saved him from – because he was kind of over-rotating, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And it looked like he would have really slammed hard on his head into the barricade. But Vader saved the day in that case.
Yeah.
One note from – you know, this is your opening match. You want it to be – fast-paced and intense, full of action. And I just didn't – I mean, they were trying really hard, but it just didn't seem like the crowd was into this match very much.
Also, like, Vader and Yokozuna together are, like – obviously, they're two of the best big men in history.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lot of fun watching them because they're both so stiff.
Yes.
Like, Vader's hitting hard, obviously, because that's what he does. And then Yokozuna, who's like, okay, is that how it's going to be?
No, right.
So then he, like, whips him into the corner, and he splashed him hard.
Yeah, I was surprised they saved this spot to so late in the match, because that's what actually did kind of get the crowd into it.
Yeah.
Was those guys just wailing on each other a lot. And so, I'm surprised that they waited that long. These guys are, you're right, super stiff.
Yeah.
They're inflicting a lot of damage.
There was a spot where Vince McMahon says, there's a pack of wolves, a pack of buffalo, a herd of buffalo. Like, he could not figure out what he wanted to say. And I don't understand what he was even going for, but it was great.
As the action's kind of winding up, coming to a close, Jake the Snake kind of goes for a pin on Owen, but Jim Cornette interferes, of course, because he doesn't want to have to face Yokozuna.
Right.
And then I've got, you know, he actually comes into the ring. Jake gets him set for the DDT, which I was like, this DDT, Jim Cornette, that'll be badass.
Yeah.
But Vader, of course, saves the day, does the Vader bomb, and they get a win. And then I'm sad because Yokozuna doesn't get to eat his lunch, so to speak.
Yeah.
I didn't like that very much. I wanted to see the gimmick.
Yeah. Like, it would have been, you know, Ahmed Johnson and Jake Roberts holding Cornette's arms or something.
Right.
And then, but also, Jim Cornette's not a wrestler. He threw out both of his knees falling from a scaffold in, like, the 80s. So.
But he is an asshole, and I want to see an asshole get his ass whipped. That's just what I want.
That's a solid point.
So I am already upset after match number one. So we go right back to the back, and we get a Roddy Piper promo, and it's basically showing kind of the history of the little rivalry or the angle that they're shooting with Goldust.
Yep.
Then they show Miss Marlena, who is Goldust's valet slash manager, however you want to say that. She's kind of chilling in the back.
Yeah.
And then they cut to Piper, who's just standing in the back lot holding a bat.
Yep.
And Goldust drives up in his gold car.
Yeah.
And then we have match number two, which is
Rowdy Roddy Piper versus Goldust.
This is a Hollywood backlot brawl, like Hollywood is known for.
Yeah, of course, everything.
When I think
you
of
you want to settle something, you go to the Hollywood backlot.
Forget you Chicago, forget you New York.
Right,
Hollywood's where the tough guys.
Yeah,
because it's catered.
Yes, they got a nice spread. The craft services came out for that. Oh.
This is basically just a hardcore match outside. Yep. We've got dumpsters, we've got cars, we have an entire catering table filled with goodies.
Yeah.
So craft services is out there,
of course,
and of course they go right over and, you know, drag each other through it and just mess all that up. There's a small pack of people that are watching this match who I'm not sure why they needed people there. I don't know. But they wanted at least a small crowd who were really not even saying or doing anything. They're just kind of standing there.
Yeah. Well, because this didn't happen the night of WrestleMania. It did not. No, this happened, I think Roddy Piper said like Goldust said like Tuesday or Wednesday of that week. So like, because I think Piper broke his hand.
Yeah.
At one point, like he tags Goldust hard in the face.
Yeah, he's bleeding really badly.
And like Piper broke his hand on that. I think that's the story. But yeah, that happened like Tuesday or Wednesday. So that happened almost a week before the event.
But a fire hose get used, a trash can gets used, buffet tables.
Yeah.
The hood of the car is basically the ring in this one. But then it kind of ramps up to a point where Goldust gets in his car and runs over Piper.
Yeah.
Which was, that's a nice bump.
Yeah, that was pretty solid.
I was kind of shocked that they would actually do that. But as he's running over Piper, Goldust starts to make his escape, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then Piper goes and gets into a white Ford Bronco and starts to chase after him. And then we go right back to an arena.
Yeah.
And we just go right to the next match. Like, it's kind of like this, well, all right.
Yeah.
That was that.
Okay.
Let's go to Todd in the back with, it was kind of weird how that ended. And it will be, obviously this was segmented now, so we're going to see a lot more of it throughout.
That's it.
Yeah, but
probably never going to see anything.
All problems solved.
Yeah.
No more problems. Yeah. But we cut right back to the next match, which is between
Stone Cold Steve Austin with Ted DiBiase versus Savio Vega.
Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
It's starting to happen.
Yeah.
Not a big – it's so weird not seeing him get a big response from the crowd.
Yeah.
But he's not quite there yet. Mm-hmm. And he comes down. They've got this little angle that developed earlier in the night, because something that we didn't mention, there was a dark tag team tournament before this event even started. Like, there were only
this was just the finals in the dark match.
Yeah. The crowd only saw like six matches, like the pay-per-view crowd. Yeah. But then there was like this little tag team, like tournament prior to that that included the Body Donnas, the Bushwhackers, Razor Ramon, who's not on the pay per view for some reason, Owen Hart and the British Bulldog, the Godwins. I mean, they're just a lot of really good tag teams.
Yeah,
and so Stone Cold and Savio Vega were a tag team pairing.
Yep.
And apparently Stone Cold didn't want to tag him during one. They do a little video montage during the match.
Well, yeah, because like Savio Vega's a good guy and Stone Cold Steve Austin is a bad guy.
So far.
It doesn't make sense why they would team up. I'm sure there was something that I just don't remember.
Yeah, well, this was the classic Stone Cold brawl style open to this match. But this match was interrupted by Piper phoning in,
Of course,
to give us an update from the road. I didn't enjoy the distraction during this match. Like, I understand how they wanted to kind of parse it out over the pay-per-view and then ramp it up to the ending match later on. But man, like if they went ahead and they tried to get a feud for this match going. And it was completely interrupted by this Piper thing. So,
and it was very weird. Like when Piper called in, like Vince was acting like he was the one that was like driving through a tunnel. Mm-hmm. He's like, "Roddy, what's it like? What do you do? How's it?" And like, Vince, your connection is fine. Piper's is the one that should be messing up.
Right.
That just didn't make any sense.
But as Stone Cold and Savio are trying to have a match in the middle of the ring. There's just all this Piper Goldust nonsense going in, so much so that they even cut to aerial footage of the car chase, which is clearly the O.J.
Simpson,
which I thought, bad taste.
Yeah.
I thought that was pretty low. Mm-hmm. I didn't enjoy that at all.
Yeah. But this match, though, actually did have some really good spots.
It was a good match.
Like, Austin threw Savio Vega into the post at one point. And then he was acting like he was swinging a bat. So then when Savio Vega came back out, he hit him with like a double axe handle, but it was like he was swinging a baseball bat. And like, that's just a fun spot.
That is nice.
Like it was showing, giving Austin like some personality, which his entrance, clearly he had none because they were still like, you're just going to be quiet and not do anything.
Right. It's weird seeing this iteration of him because he's not full on Stone Cold yet. The referee does get hit and knocked out, and I marked that it was kind of a – it was barely a hit.
Yeah.
But the ref sold it as much as he could, and he got knocked out, which allows for Austin to do his heel shenanigans. He gets the $1 million belt,
mm-hmm.
and as Savio's kind of laid out on the apron,
mm-hmm.
he goes to hit him with the $1 million belt,
yep.
which, you know, which knocks him out. And Ted's trying to revive the ref, and he pours a soda on his head. I thought that was a pretty good moment.
Yeah.
But, of course, then we have the little spot where the ref wakes up acting like nothing's ever happened, and he rings the bell because Savio's knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was knocked out from the bell, but it looks like Steve has him in a sleeper hold, yeah. so it looks like he made him pass out from the sleeper hold, and, yeah. and Stone Cold wins mm-hmm. with the heat.
Yep.
And
as he should. There's also one other spot in here, which is like one of my favorite spots in all of wrestling.
Right.
It's when they have like 10 false finishes back to back to back to back.
Right.
It's like Savio pins and then Austin flips him over and then Austin pins right. and then Savio flips him back over and they just keep doing that. And like, that's one of my favorite spots. First time I ever saw that was Brian Pillman versus Ricky the Dragon Steamboat. And
right.
that was my favorite match for years just because of that.
That is a cool thing when they do all that. They just start rolling all over each other.
Yeah, they just start rolling.
1-2 and then move. 1-2 yeah. move. 1-2 move. Yeah. I like that a lot.
Like, there was more false finishes in that one spot than the entire Iron Man match.
Right. In just that 1 10-second. Yeah. Yep. I loved it. But we go, after this match is over, we go right to the back where Mr. Perfect is interviewing Diesel.
Mm-hmm.
And they kind of, I remember them showing, they're showing a video montage of kind of what had happened in the rivalry between Diesel mm-hmm. and Undertaker.
Yeah.
And they're showing, there was a little coffin segment.
Yeah.
You know, where they're showing, I guess, Diesel in the coffin.
Yep.
And they clearly show him looking scared.
Yeah.
And then the whole interview is about how not scared he is
yeah.
and how he doesn't sweat the small stuff. Yeah. I thought that was...
Yeah, at this point, he was, like, just very cool. And then, like, it was too much. Like, he overcorrected too much. Like, you have to right. care. Because this is just apathetic and nobody... Mm-hmm. Like, being cool isn't, you know... You have to be cool but still have an opinion about something. And he's right. just like, nah... I'm Diesel.
Whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's got that whatever attitude, but they're clearly showing video of him going, oh no,
yeah.
I'm in trouble. You know?
Right?
I'm just not a Kevin Nash fan, but
yeah.
what have you. But then we do like a little Triple H thing where he's getting introduced
mm-hmm.
to the ring, and he comes down to the ring with Sable, who's
yeah.
mostly clothed.
Yeah. Well, at this was her first entrance, and it was
yeah.
Because Triple H used to have just a random woman on his arm.
Right.
When he would walk down to the ring.
Right.
So this actually sets up a little thing at the end of the match.
It does, and we'll get to that in a minute.
Yes.
But he's coming down to the ring with Sable because he's about to fight in match number 4, which is between...
Hunter Hearst Helmsley versus the Ultimate Warrior.
There is a huge pop for Warrior.
Huge pop, yeah.
As he enters the ring, they've got the little fireworks display. They're ready to go. Hits the ring with full force, blows up very quickly.
As he does.
As he always does. Yeah. And this match is interesting. It's less than a 2-minute match.
Mm-hmm.
It is I don't know. It's a stunt. It's a squash match for no real reason other than, hey, we need a name in this one.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't even remember how much he was even advertised, but it was like, hey, we just need something to give the fans real quick because we don't really have a lot of huge names yet.
Yeah. I remember he was back for a little bit, but I don't know exactly the extent of it. I just remember him still being sort of active.
Right.
But yeah, it's very strange to just have him come back and then squash Triple H, then no-sell Triple H.
Yeah, that and like the biggest no-sell in history.
Yeah.
But what's the point of that? You got a new guy that you're bringing in.
Yeah.
You've gone to all this trouble to you know, you're starting to build him up.
Yeah.
You like his look. You think he's going to do good. And then, you let him come out and get squashed to a legend.
Yeah.
You basically take his finisher
mm-hmm.
and make it irrelevant.
Yep. They decent...
They could have done this with 10 other dudes in the back.
Right? Like, they did a decent job after the match, again, to still give him credibility.
Well, yeah, let's go right to that. Because
okay.
they go... they take it right after this match is over. Warrior celebrates and tries to catch his breath for 5 minutes, yeah. and the crowd goes crazy.
Yeah.
But then we cut right back to an interview in the back where I think, yeah, Todd's interviewing Mark Mero, as yeah. he calls him, Muro, yeah, or something like that.
Mara.
Yeah, something like that. And as he's talking, clearly from the school of Macho Man Randy Savage,
yeah.
Mark Mero has a really abrasive, obnoxious interview technique.
Yes.
But as he's walking back, then what, Triple H just...
comes in and just like shoves him for no reason.
So now we have instant heat between those two, which
exactly.
is... So yes, he's getting him into a program.
Yeah.
So really like, quickly they after, did, that's
they
fine.
They did like a decent job of that. But yeah, I never liked that idea of bringing a legend back in to go over on a current talent, because there's that guy's going to leave. Like Ultimate Warrior, you can't expect him to stay. It's the Ultimate Warrior. You know that he's going to leave eventually, like in like 6 months at best. Triple H is going to be there.
I wonder if Triple H volunteered.
Mm.
Just for the rub, like just for the, I'm in a match with the Warrior.
Yeah. I mean, it's 20 years later and we're still talking about it. Like,
right? That's true. And it's 20 years later and Triple H is still there.
Yeah.
So I wonder, because there's really didn't seem like there was any gain from him. And so for him to do it, but there was any gain from WWE either. Like,
yeah.
Why would they do this? Other than, I mean, I know you got to get Warrior on the card.
Yeah.
But if we're going to do this type of finish, then we could have done that to anybody. Why did they have to do it with the new guy?
Right.
And ruin, or potentially ruin, someone that you're going to push at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed really weird. But continuing on, we have their quick Triple H Mero fight in the back. Instant feud. We're ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
And then we show Piper on his way back to the arena. So they keep us in touch with that storyline, still developing and unfolding. He's coming back. And then we go right to match number 5. We're already to number 5 so
crazy.
Quickly, which is between
Diesel versus The Undertaker with Paul Bearer.
And this match is – I thought this was a really interesting match because of all the matches we've seen with Undertaker so far, it seemed like Diesel had the best potential to give him a really good match because they're both comparable sizes.
Mm-hmm.
Undertaker's way more athletic, but someone that could take the pounding and still kind of move around I thought would be Diesel. So I was actually curious – I mean, because this is about a – 17-minute match, so they're going to be going for a little bit. I was curious to see how this would kind of unfold. What did you think about this match?
It was a pretty good match overall, considering like Diesel is what he is. But I thought Diesel did so much better in this one than he did in his previous match against Shawn Michaels.
Yeah.
Like, so much better. I think overall it was like a much better paced match and good back and forth. And also it was like Undertaker must love when he's the smaller guy, because Undertaker always wrestles like he's more agile, he's more athletic than a guy who's generally that size, like 6'10".
Right, and that's what I mean, because it looked better with someone of his size. Like let's say with Giant Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Like, okay, that's someone that's kind of comparable in size. Undertaker's just running rings around him because, Giant Gonzalez is so stationary.
Yeah.
But because of, like, they're kind of equal sizes and of almost equal athletic ability, it just looks so much better. It seemed like Undertaker could let the athleticism unfold a little bit more and do
more. Yes, I would agree. Absolutely.
And so I thought he looked great in this match. This is probably one of the I shouldn't even say that's irresponsible, but it's one of my favorite Undertaker matches in that he just looked great.
Yes.
So
at least up until this point, it was a very, very, very good match.
One of the notes I have is that the announcers are really trying to put over Nash.
Yeah.
Just, like, over-put him over.
Yeah.
Which almost makes me want to hate him more.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were just really trying to get him over. And he didn't do very much.
Right.
But it's just, oh, yeah, I get it. You like this guy. He's your champion or one of your champions or one of your top guys.
Right.
But you're overselling him to me right now. And his work in the ring right now isn't matching what you're saying.
Yeah, and he appeared in WCW like 2 months later also, so like you're putting him over, and then Kevin Nash is just going to like leave soon.
So, I mean, do you think it couldn't have been known?
No. I mean, WWF has like a 90-day policy.
Right.
Like if you're going to not renew, they want like 90-day notice, essentially, because otherwise, like, it, your contract, like, rolls over. Right. Or at least that's what it was in the 90s. So they knew, like, Nash and Hall gave their notices. So they knew that Hall, that Kevin Nash was leaving.
It just, this match seemed, it was going really well, and then kind of the ending was kind of odd for me. Because Diesel then started to dominate the match. And as he was dominating, he would really just kind of hot dog it to the crowd.
Yeah.
So he would, you know, we had a little power bomb segment where he did a couple power bombs, and he wouldn't cover, or he would, like, you know, he would do the big move, damage the Undertaker, and then just kind of look at the crowd and and, you know, be heelish, I guess.
Right. Yeah, that was a little weird.
But then just like this abrupt, quick comeback from Taker for the win. It was just, I don't know, it didn't kind of have a nice natural build to the end.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's also Vince McMahon does his famous. He goes, one, two, he got him. No. I'm like, well, he does that all the time.
Every move is the last move. Like, every move that happens is Vince McMahon is selling it like it's the last move of the match.
Right.
You know, he hits him square in the face. That's it. It's over.
Yeah. What a maneuver. And it's, I mean, I guess that's good, but also it just, when you do it the exact same way for every single move, it's just too much.
Yeah, when you do it 50 times in a match, it's, I'm no longer intrigued by the end.
Yeah.
But my thing from this match is that it looked, these guys were picking each other up and throwing each other around, and it looked really good. So on that note, I think it was okay.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the match, just, it was pretty good.
Yeah. I put a pretty good match myself. Yep. So
So then we go right to the back where Todd is at security control.
Because that's a thing.
Yep. They have a whole place set up in the back that is labeled security control. We see Piper and Goldust, and they're pulling into the parking lot, and the action kind of spills backstage.
Yeah.
As Piper kind of stumbles around, and they start to stumble out into the ring area. Piper appears to be bandaging his hand along the way, I guess. I didn't know that it was shot at two different times.
Yeah.
So the continuity is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Basically, they're working their way down to have a match in a ring. It's not introduced or anything. It's just spilling out. This is how fights happen. Yeah. We're going to end it in the ring.
It's the Hollywood Arena Brawl now.
I think Goldust is one of the most underrated wrestlers.
Oh, yeah.
But he's so great.
So, so good.
6'6", you know, 300 pounds or close to, and he's so agile and athletic. He's really incredible.
Yeah, he's without a doubt one of the best. When he teamed up with his brother Cody in, like, 2011, 2012-ish, them against the Shield had some of the best matches
in the last
10 years, and they're both very, very good. Goldust is just amazing. He's really, really good.
But we finally get a match in a ring, and these guys just go after one another. A lot of low blows, a lot of, let's see, at one point, Piper kind of hulks up a little bit and then just grabs Goldust by the balls.
Yeah. There's a lot of homoeroticism with Goldust.
Really? Cause, butt
grabbing and kissing.
Which Piper was clearly uncomfortable with.
Yeah.
But he actually ends up stripping him down, right? And I'm looking to see how this match ended, but
it's technically not a match, so
that's true. We don't have a buffet table to settle the score completely. Yeah,
so like Piper grabbed his balls, and then he kneed him in the balls, and then he spanked him, and then he ripped off Goldust's suit, to reveal lingerie.
A lot of it.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just a top or a bra or something. He was fully decked out in a thong.
Yeah. He went for it.
And with nylons and the whole bit.
Yeah.
So
apparently, like, he didn't tell anybody either.
Really?
Yeah. Or at least he didn't tell Vince. Because on a podcast, it was like him and Marlena, they went shopping. He's like, I think this would be really funny. So then they were like, yeah, let's go for it.
Oh, well, now I want to go back and listen to Vince's natural reaction to that. I wonder what he was thinking in his brain. That is incredible. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Good surprise.
Yeah, that it worked. Everybody
probably why
he
didn't get a huge push after that.
Yeah.
Vince doesn't like those kind of surprises, I don't think. But this match did actually get like a really kind of big – or Piper got a really big ovation at the end of it.
Yeah,
so
did.
It did – kind of end up well. I didn't like the whole gimmick. It just seemed kind of weird. I'd rather just watch these two guys wrestle in the middle of the ring. Just have a match. I don't think it needed to be all tricked up and everything.
I agree.
But after this, we go right to a video segment hyping the Iron Man match because now we're ready for it. Finkel announces Mr. Gorilla Monsoon, who is now the new president of WWF at this point.
Yep, because he took over for Piper.
That seems like it's not a big deal, but it will turn out to be a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Then the combatants come down to the ring, and we get ready for match number six, which is between
Bret the Hitman Hart versus the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels with Jose Lothario.
Jose Lothario comes down to the ring, and Shawn Michaels is nowhere to be seen. Mm-hmm. We're hearing the sexy boy music, and it's just Jose. And then Jose points up to the rafters.
Yeah.
And then we get to see the famous entrance that they pretty much show on every WWE
Everything.
Video promo. And Shawn Michaels, was it rappelling or gliding, sliding?
Ziplining. Ziplining, there you go, that's the one.
Ziplining down to the ring, and it's huge. It's really one of the
best entrances in history.
It may be the best. It's really fantastic, but he gets in the ring. He's ready to go, full-on HBK.
Yep.
Really great. And then they introduce Bret the Hitman Hart, who gets four little firework pops.
Yeah.
He walks down to the ring with his Hitman glasses and gives them to a kid.
That was his son, actually.
Yeah, it was a little Blade.
Yep.
Yeah. And then we get ready for the sudden death match. Now, this is one of the most talked about matches in WWE history. Bret Hart has said on multiple occasions that, like, this is one of the ones that he's the most proudest of.
Mm-hmm.
Let's break down this 60-minute match. What did you think of it overall? Or just the idea of these guys going for 60 minutes?
I enjoy Iron Man matches just in general. Recently, Bayley and Sasha Banks had one in NXT for 30 minutes, and it was amazing.
Right.
They used to do it in WCW quite a bit. Steamboat and Rick Rude had a really good one.
Well, this is pretty much the Ric Flair special.
Yeah. Like, oh, yeah. Ric Flair.
60-minute Broadway.
Yeah, he used to do it all the time. And it was like, Iron Man matches can be amazing. And this one was very, very good. But it was also so much so that they were like, we're going to go 60 minutes.
Right.
So we're going to, Bret Hart's going to have a rest hold for 27 of the 60 minutes.
Well, and that's what I was worried about. Just sitting there looking at a bunch of stall tactics.
Yes.
Instead of, like, let's keep building.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was worried about is, you know, because this has been talked about and because it's, you know, people say it's one of the greatest matches of all time. I was a little skeptical going into it.
Yep.
Thinking, you know, how is it like I remembered it? Was it going to be great?
Yeah.
And I came away thinking, not that great.
Yeah.
Like the ending is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
They start this match out with a very technical wrestling approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to come out. We're going to lock up. We're going to do a lot of mat work. We're going to do a lot of reversals, a lot of headlocks, a lot of working a body part.
Mm-hmm.
But then I noticed, like, after about 15 minutes, both these guys are pretty blown up, right? And my first thought is, how are these guys going to go another 45 minutes?
Right.
Are they going to have interference? Like, what kind of gimmicks are they going to use to kind of propel this thing forward for the next 45 minutes.
Yeah.
One of the things they used was a little moment where they both kind of spill out onto the floor. HBK kind of goes after, you know, kind of slings Bret Hart into the timekeeper and then goes for the chin music.
Yep.
Actually knocks out the timekeeper. They had to bring, like, a stretcher out for him. Which I thought was a nice, because the audience gets to, you want to keep the audience always watching something.
Right.
And so that kind of gave them a nice little rest period while they kind of dealt with him.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
They didn't string that out long enough, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, they could have wasted a little bit more time on that.
Oh,
but,
yeah. I would agree with that.
What did you think of just, like, how this match was unfolding early? Like, what were your thoughts?
Early on, it was, I enjoyed it. There was some, a lot of solid amateur wrestling spots, pretty aggressive tie up. There's one spot Shawn Michaels does a head scissor to the outside.
Yeah.
And Vince McMahon calls it a Mexican-type maneuver, which is...
Well, Gorilla was at ringside, so...
He's like, Vince, say this.
Vince. He's helping him. He got pretty racist,
But overall, like, they're both... nobody can deny that they're both great technical wrestlers.
Right.
Bret Hart is obviously known for going, like working... having good psychology in the ring.
Mm-hmm.
So he does try to build it and tell a story.
Yeah.
And I think they did that fairly well in this, but generally it's almost like Bret Hart put together a 20-minute match and then had to stretch it out for three times as long.
Yeah, because one of the things I was really conscious of when I was watching this was just the interest level of the crowd.
Like yes.
How, you know, are we going to start out really fast and get them into it and then settle down and, you know, kind of go up and down a little bit? It looked like they just wanted to kind of, you know, slowly build from the start and then hopefully the crowd would get into it by the end.
Yeah.
I noticed about, you know, 25 minutes in, HBK kind of took over just the domination of it, and it was inflicting a lot of damage. But the thing I noticed was that he wasn't covering ever.
Yes.
So it was basically just this thing of, oh, we're just going to do a lot of big moves, and I'm going to look like I'm just beating the shit out of you, but I'm not going for the win, which is not it wasn't how this match was billed.
Yeah.
It was kind of billed as like, hey, we're going to have a lot of pinfalls.
Mm-hmm. And the most will win.
Right. I like that there weren't any pinfalls, but I wish it wasn't. I wish it was just billed as such, as instead of, we're gonna go, you know, best 4 out of 7 or something like that.
Yeah.
Like if they had built it like, listen, I'm not coming in here to get a lot of pinfalls. I'm coming in here to do damage. I'm here to retire you.
Yeah.
Then to me, the psychology might have been a little bit more in line, but
yeah, because then even like Vince on the mic could be like, well, this is what Sean said, or this is what Brett said. He just wanted to do damage.
The thing that impressed me about this match the most, as far as like the putting together of it and the selling of it, was Jerry Lawler was fantastic during this match.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one that kind of kept the interest going, like pointing out the strategies over and over it, and how each other's moves was going to affect the other one. You know, when to go for pins and kind of the toll it's taking on. Like, to me, he's the one that kept me really involved in the match and kind of got the excitement going as opposed to a lot of the action that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about
it? Yeah, I would agree. When Lawler just talks about wrestling and he's not doing stupid jokes.
Yeah, he wasn't doing bits. He was like super serious going over the psychology of the match. Mm-hmm. And it was,
and that's what you need. Like, you need to have that guy. Like, Vince is just going to be the call of commentator, but if you have Jerry just talking about the actual wrestling of it, it's going to be so much more interesting to hear, you know? And you're going to find out a reason why. Like, if Bret Hart's got a hammerlock on for 8 minutes, you're going to want to hear the reason behind it. You know, you don't want to just hear, well, here's these two guys. I wonder what's happening, you know? But if you say, oh, well, he's really wearing down his arm right now, so that way he can't do this later on, or he can't do this. And that is just so much more interesting to hear because you understand the logic behind what's happening in the ring.
Right.
Instead of, oh, well, I'm tired and I want to rest, which is what you think is happening, which is what happens, but, you know.
Yeah, there are so many, you know, these guys are so athletic. There are so many great moves and so many great spots in this match because they did them all. They emptied the bucket. It's, here's everything I know how to do in a ring.
Mm-hmm.
Here's everything that we can do to make this go 60. And it looked fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I have here, like, at the 45-minute mark, the crowd is still kind of in their seats and just kind of watching, and it's still not – they're not – it doesn't seem like they're super into it yet or have one set of allegiance or another. It's just kind of like they're just watching this –
yes.
Kind of unfold,
mm-hmm.
but there's, you know, they're not on their feet yet. They're not really super engaged in this match yet.
Mm-hmm.
I have that there's a count out. They went for like this little count out segment with 12 minutes left, and it kind of got some boos from the crowd and started to get people into it.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want to see a count out for one of the falls after this far.
Yeah.
But that's when I kind of noticed them starting to get into it. I also have that, you know, with about 6 minutes left, Brett tries to put the sharpshooter on, and you know, they're starting to do the submission moves towards the end, but he actually he couldn't get the sharpshooter, so he did the Boston Crab, but they were so close to the ropes.
Yeah,
it was funny to kind of watch Michaels pretend to struggle when he's just right there next to the ropes.
It was like Sergeant Slaughter and Hulk Hogan at WrestleMania 7.
Can't quite extend my elbow.
Good thing he was using that hammerlock earlier because I can't reach.
So many, you know, to go spot for spot in this match would seem silly, but they start to ramp it up towards the end. Sean kind of takes the lead with about 3 minutes left.
Mm-hmm.
And because there are no pins, you know, Sean knows that he's got – this is where the psychology comes in. 3 minutes left, Sean knows that he has to pin him to get the belt.
Yeah.
And so he starts doing everything he can. So it starts to look really natural. The crowd starts to really get into it.
Mm-hmm.
He's putting on every move that he can. And because he kind of does the what I call the Macho Man special, which is the double axe handle.
Yeah.
And then the flying elbow, which looked fantastic. I don't know. Whoever the producer was on this
mm-hmm.
had the best camera angle for that because
mm-hmm.
it looked incredible. But
it was a good, yeah, good shot.
And, he, you know, they both get two counts every time.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Brett's, you know, staggering, so tired. He's just beaten to a pulp.
Yeah.
Sean goes up to the top rope to do like a, I don't know if it, I can't remember if it was a splash or a drop kick or something, but Brett catches him
mm-hmm.
and then puts him right into a sharpshooter. And that looks super cool.
Yeah, that was really good.
Because he just kind of catches him out of the air and then has both of his legs on the ground and then puts him right into the sharpshooter. And we ride out the last 30 seconds, you know, with Sean writhing in the sharpshooter.
Yes.
So I thought that whole entire spot was fantastic. Like,
it was a good spot. Because
the crowd was on their feet at this point, and they were really into the ending of this match. Mm-hmm. But now we've got the bell. No decisions. Bret Hart is still the champion until
Gorilla Monsoon comes in and tells Fink to resume the match under sudden death rules.
That's right. So one fall wins it all. Yeah.
I love how Bret just gets the belt and walks out. And then when he hears that, he turns around and goes, "Why?"
Yeah,
I won.
It's just another one of those instances where WWF just changes the rules to meet their own needs, which is fine.
Yeah.
After all those 60 minutes, I was surprised at how kind of lackluster the overtime was
because
it was really just Brett doing a heat up spot where he just kind of beats around Sean for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then what happened? He got
Sean super kicked him and then they were both laid out.
Right.
But then Brett got up first, which always bothers me. Like if you're the one that gets hit,
you should be the last one up.
And then, and then Sean hits him with a real super kick.
Right. HBK, he does that thing where he always whips him into the corner, and then he just grabs onto the ropes and just kind of launches himself back over the dude that's running after him.
Yes.
And then he gets a super kick, and we get the 1-2-3 for the win. And it was
– and his boyhood dream comes true.
Right. So much went into this match, and we've heard both these guys speak on it after the fact, you know, talking about – how they wanted it to go the full time and then have to go to sudden death and all of that stuff. And and just all the heat that came with everything that was in this match. It's because Brett was going away after this, yeah?
Mm.
He was leaving the company for a little bit to be a TV star on the...
Oh, yeah, Lonesome Dove.
On the Lonesome Dove show.
Yeah.
So now the company's in the hands of the Heartbreak Kid, who's been less than reliable.
Yeah.
I got to think that this was kind of a touch-and-go time for WWF at this point because they don't – you know, Stone Cold hadn't happened yet. The Rock's a couple years away.
Mm-hmm.
We've now got all of our hopes and dreams. And, you know, Diesel's about to leave. Razor Ramon's about to leave.
Yeah.
Whether this was known at the time or not, you know, things could have gone really sour for them. You know, they're about to lose a lot of their big stars, and that's all they have at this point
because
there's no undercard, really.
Right.
Maybe Owen Hart, maybe – who else might they have?
Like Yokozuna and Vader are still there, but I mean,
but Vader's still not like
they're not pushing him. They weren't pushing Vader like they WCW did, or like he's a big monster heel. Which I don't know why, because they should. He's amazing,
right?
Sean just came back from losing his smile. I don't know. Maybe don't give him this much pressure, or like don't put him in this spotlight.
He's just so good.
Yeah. Like and that's the thing. Like, his talent is it's off the charts.
Yeah, I mean, you watch this match, it's like, how is this guy not our top guy?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these guys put on an incredible 60-minute display.
Yeah.
I would recommend in the future not wrestling for 60 minutes because it wasn't – like again, it wasn't like this nonstop – of course, it's not going to be nonstop action for 60 minutes, but I didn't think that they really held the crowd the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
The ending was fantastic, but – you know, a lot of it was just stop, start. You'd watch a certain, you know, spot or segment, and then it's back into laying on the ground, elbow lock, arm lock, headlock.
Yeah.
You know.
The one thing that I don't I didn't like about this match, or matches in general that like I find to be the best, have a lot of false finishes.
Yeah.
And this one just didn't have as many. Like, if this match had like three times as many false finishes, like at the 20-minute mark, they're like, oh, wow, this could be it. The crowd's going to get more into it because they think something's going to actually happen. And then you do it again at the 30 and 40-minute mark. You're like, oh, no, this is you bring the excitement up. The matches need to have like hills and valleys of excitement. And this one just had, it was like kind of a.
Because they weren't really going for covers. Right. I mean, they weren't looking like they were trying to get pinfalls, or at least try and get as many pinfalls as they could.
Yeah, which is what the match is supposed to be.
That kind of took it out for the psychology for me, because it didn't look like they were trying to win.
Yeah.
Which
you should be doing.
Which they should be trying to do.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to our awards for the night. Yeah. Zhui, what is your pop of the night?
My pop of the night goes to The Ultimate Warrior.
I completely agree. When that music hit, that place went crazy, and that makes me upset because he should not be getting the biggest pop of the night.
Yeah, right? Especially when he hasn't been in a WrestleMania in, what, 3?
Yep.
Or 4? Yeah, he was at WrestleMania 8.
My bump of the night goes to, and I don't know his name, but whoever the timekeeper was that took the Sweet Chin music.
That was announcer Tony Chimmel.
Tony got laid the fuck out.
Yeah.
And it looked real. It didn't look like Sean pulled it at all.
No, he's like, you're getting kicked in the face.
Yeah. Listen, here's a couple $100. I'm going to knock you out.
Yeah.
Because it looked real. It had a huge pop. I don't mean like crowd, but just like sound.
Yeah.
And he got knocked the fuck out.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that's for a non-wrestler to take that kind of shot, mm-hmm. for a match he's not even in, I give it to that timekeeper for sure.
That was good.
What's your bump of the night?
My bump of the night is Yokozuna splashing Vader in the corner. It was that just.
That's a lot of weight.
Yeah. Like,
that's like 1,000 pounds of people.
Right? Yeah. And like Yokozuna just running full force at you. Oh, goodness.
He was so fast.
Yeah. He's big man. He's fast. He's agile.
I couldn't believe he could run.
Yeah. And
he's so. Oh, my gosh.
Like, yeah, I know. We've talked about him for the last, three. And he's really, really, really good. So there's a reason.
Rest in peace, Yoke. Yeah. You're the man.
Seriously.
What is your botch of the evening, sir?
My botch of the evening goes to the footage of the O.J. Simpson chase.
That is exactly what I have. Poor taste, poor execution, poor all around. It was unnecessary. And to me, that discredits your entire production when you do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And for whatever minimal laugh or kitsch they could get from that.
Yeah.
Like,
that's definitely an idea that Vince is like, oh, this is going to be great. Everybody's going to love this.
Yeah, it's topical. Everyone will know. You know, we've seen a lot of dumb shit, bad segments, whatever. Yeah. And to me, I just thought this was, a woman died, a man died.
Yeah.
And we're using it as kind of entertainment fodder.
Yeah. I immediately thought of when Mr. Perfect used the 56 swipes line.
Right.
That's immediately what I thought of for the Rodney King. I'm like, oh, no.
Right. And then this was like 1,000 times
worse. Yeah. Because
they used the actual fucking footage.
Because, I had to research what the 56 swipes meant.
Right.
But this one is like, oh, I know exactly what that means. And, like, this is just. They could have done so much better.
Poor taste.
Yeah.
My spot of the night is the last 3 minutes of the Iron Man match. Well executed. It did. Bring me in and kind of get me going. What is your spot?
My spot of the night is Savio Vega, Stone Cold Steve Austin, false finish spot.
Ooh.
Yeah, they got it.
That was nice.
That was a good one.
Very
much enjoyed that.
What is your worst match of the night?
Worst match of the night goes to the 6-man tag of Camp Cornette versus Ahmed Johnson, Vader, Ahmed Johnson, and Jake Snake. No, Yokozuna.
Yeah, to put you on the spot, why was that your worst match of the night?
I don't know.
I have no reason. I just don't like it.
It was like,
I need you to have a reason.
Yeah, no, I do not. There was some solid action. It was just overall, I just wasn't into it.
Well, for the first match of the night, and you know, kind of the needs of that match to kind of get everybody going.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It didn't have
What it
actually
needed.
Why am I giving you a reason? Screw you.
No, exactly. That's my reason, Terry. What you just said.
My worst match of the night was the Ultimate Warrior versus Triple H.
Yep.
This is unnecessary and uninteresting.
Yeah.
And not that. I don't. Fuck that.
Good reason.
Yep. You give me a reason why my worst match is the worst match. There you go.
It's too short and the pedigree.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. What is your best match of the night, sir?
Best match, Iron Man match.
Iron Man match all around. Yeah. Yes, fantastic. Mostly because it was really the only match on the card.
Yeah.
And now for the big award of the evening. Who is your MVP of WrestleMania 12?
I'm going Bret the Hitman Hart, actually. I feel like he did a good job in the match, and he was the one that had to go under. And,
right.
And, you know, he had to deal with Shawn Michaels being an asshole. So I'm going to give it to Bret.
Well, good. My MVP for WrestleMania 12 is Jerry the King Lawler.
Ooh.
I thought, as good as the wrestling was in that match,
yep.
His commentary made it more, it actually made it iconic. Like, he made it watchable.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know the people in the crowd couldn't get that vantage point. Like, they can't sit there and listen to what he's saying.
Right.
But for the people at home that don't get just the live part of it,
yeah,
he made that match watchable.
Mm-hmm.
Watchable. He made the psychology work. He made everything happen to me.
He pulled you
in. Yeah. And he, like you said, he dropped the bullshit and was just a dude actually giving color commentary to wrestling.
Yeah.
And it made it seem like it was football or basketball. Like, it made it seem real to me.
Yeah.
And that's just my thought on that.
That's good.
Yeah.
I can appreciate that.
Good. Thank you for liking what I thought.
Yeah.
I like that. And so that's all we have today for WrestleMania 12. Next week, we get probably my favorite WrestleMania, WrestleMania 13,
yep.
Where we'll have the famous match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Bret the Hitman Hart, the I Quit match.
Yep.
We have
the Blood from a Stone
match. We have the debut of WrestleMania of Rocky Maivia.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the main event of The Undertaker versus Psycho Sid.
Yeah.
And so until next week, this is Terry Camp Coronet Catlett here with my partner Jway Hollywood Backlot Holt signing off.
Bye.